It's 2 o'clock, and it is time for your appointment with Elizabeth Barrett, the Reluctant Therapist. What's on your mind today, Elizabeth?
Well, Brad, today I am waxing philosophically about what it is to be a woman in the 21st century.
Oh, so just light. Not thinking the small, the big things at all.
No, light things, light topics. I teach family psychology. I have for 16 years. I keep watching the changes in my students, which are kind of the bellwether of what's coming, you know, into adulthood, or the people that are coming into adulthood. I have been able to watch the millennials age in and age out, and now Gen Z aging in and beginning to age out. And there's some interesting changes, as always, with each generation, things that are helpful and things that are not. And yesterday in class, the conversation about pluralistic ignorance came up. And the pluralistic ignorance is going along and doing something that you don't really agree with and really know that it's not right, but everyone else is doing it, so clearly it must be a really good idea. And that's how we get into a lot of trouble. Like,
all the cool kids are doing it.
Exactly. Right? So we start talking about kind of the trends of childbearing, and currently two-thirds of children born to women under the age of 30 are born to single moms. And there was a thing on the radio yesterday, our radio station, that was interviewing a woman about being a single mom by choice, choosing to have a child. And the reporter was talking about, you know, how things have changed, and, you know, women are taking, you know, things into their own hands and having children, and interviewed her for her day to day and what it looked like. And I kept listening thinking, this is a very skewed view. Because the reporter touched on the facts, which that all the research for the last 20 years that is still current says that children do better in a two-parent family. We have a lot of single-parent homes, some by choice and some not by choice. And the ones not by choice, you know, struggle. Statistically, single-parent homes struggle. But we've started creating kind of this fantasy language around single motherhood and choosing to have your child and, you know, doing it my way and not having to listen to someone else or take their feedback. That's troublesome to me, because I hear my students talking about kind of the same thing, that I don't really believe in marriage. I'm not really thinking I'm going to get married. And, you know, but if I want to have kids, I'll just have them by myself. And so I asked, like, how do you think that all turns out? It's like, well, it'll be fine. And they have kind of this semi-plan. It concerns me that the social narrative, our social media and media itself, kind of push the stories, because the reporter yesterday mentioned that research says and states that two-parent homes, those children do better. Children, and the highest rate of poverty we have in our country is single mothers and children. So statistically, that's a fact. But the reporter went on to say, although research points that two-parent homes are better, the research doesn't take into account how things are changing and what people are doing. I was like, but that doesn't mean it's good. Like, that doesn't mean that that narrative is healthy and actually going to pan out well. And there's a couple of reasons why women are choosing to have children without, you know, a partner. And one of them is they want to do things on their own. But the other one is the stark divide between marriageable men and women who are out in the workforce and building businesses and, you know, building successful lives. And so we have a couple of problems that are pushing this narrative, is that we have to somehow elevate our marriage pool, so that men are stepping up and able to take on that role. But the social narrative around that is that, well, men, you know, young people don't want to get married because it's too scary, or the world's coming to an end, or all, you know, the reason, or it's too expensive, all of those things. But really, I think that the bottom of all of these stories is that we push a social narrative, a story through the media, through, you know, Instagram or TikTok or wherever people are getting their stories, that it feels so normalized that people think that that's what we should be doing, right? Everyone else is doing that. So clearly not getting married must be a really good idea. Not having children must be a really good idea. And, you know, not getting a job and being in my basement playing video games must be a really good idea because so many people do it. That concerns me. And so I wanted to have a conversation with someone who is on the other side of this cultural narrative, a woman that has raising a family still, married, has a business, multiple businesses, keeps them all fairly balanced. I mean, we can always talk about that, what balance really looks like. But is doing these things, making these conscious choices, kind of doubling down on the rootedness of life. And is also younger than I am, so another generation back. I think you're a millennial. Would that be fair to say? She's like, I don't know. I don't know if I identify
as a millennial.
Oh, that's fine. I might be an X.
I'm an X, yeah.
Well,
yeah.
we can talk about that even, because I am a cuspy too. But I wanted to talk about what it feels like to be a woman in the 21st century and doing all these things. And do you feel like, or does anyone feel like maybe the story needs to be rewritten and we should all just kind of be solo venturers and kind of tap in and out of each other's lives? Like maybe that is a plan, or do we need to start giving more credence to a different social narrative about things that feel a little more conservative, which again is part of the non-lightness of today's conversation, is that if you talk about anything that feels traditional or conservative, being married, raising kids together, yes, you know, doing anything that feels like it's considered right-leaning, it becomes demonized. And so as a result, we see this push the other direction. It's like, oh, no, no traditional marriage. No, we're not going to just, you know, do things that the patriarch tells us to do, and we're going to be our own people. All of that pushback against anything that feels too traditional or conservative is harming us as a culture, as individuals, as families, as young people. And that's a tough story to butt up against, because the siloing of information that goes right to the people who believe the most in these stories keeps people stuck in their lane. And I think two generations from now, we're going to look back and I think be a little sad and about what we've let go of, or something else will happen and we'll see the pendulum swing another way and we'll kind of have a resurgence of embracing the beauty of the traditions, and that has nothing to do with politics, but more about what are the best ways for supporting ourselves and our family. So that's the lightness in my brain today. This is a conversation with the Reluctant Therapist. I'm Elizabeth Barrett. My guest today is Canon January, and she's here to talk about her experiences as a woman in the 21st century and as a business owner, and also just to kind of catch up because we don't get to see each other that often. We're also going to open up the phone lines to get your thoughts on what it is to be a woman or a family in the 21st century. 805-781-3875 is our number. You can always find me after the show by sending me an email to Elizabeth@thereluctanttherapist.com, or you can send me a message through Facebook and Instagram. I'm happy to respond. And you can listen to previous shows at kcbx.org, go to our archives, and there's many, many years of shows to check out. Or you can podcast our show if you'd like through Spotify, NPR podcast, Apple podcast. I just search for A Conversation with a Reluctant Therapist, hit subscribe, and the show will be there to listen to at your convenience. So we're going to take a quick break, come back, and begin our conversation right here on Central Coast Public Radio, KCBX.
Our day will come and we'll have everything. We'll share the joy. For us.
How beautiful is Karen Carpenter's voice? Just had to hear that song today. This is A Conversation with a Reluctant Therapist. I'm Elizabeth Barrett, and welcome, Cannon, January, to the
Thanks
show.
Thanks for having me.
It's nice to see you.
It's good to see you, too.
I know Cannon because I am an ambiance shopper in downtown San Luis Obispo. How long have you had ambiance?
21 years.
No way.
Yeah.
Has it gone quickly for you?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. They say time speeds up as you get older, and I feel that.
You also have another location in Paso Robles.
Yeah, we have two locations and an online presence. And we did have more locations, and like right before COVID and then during COVID, we kind of shrunk up. More is not always more.
Okay.
Two is good. Two feels really good.
Knowing our limits is always helpful.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And being able to put all your energy into fewer things can yield you better results.
So I'm not business wisdom.
Yeah.
All right. So how did you find your way into becoming a business owner? Was that your goal from the time you're young? Like, what was your kind of journey to your business acumen?
I think I wanted to be a lawyer at a very young age.
Did you grow up here?
No. I grew up in the desert, in the middle of nowhere. Are you allowed to say bad words on the
you
show?
Can't say bad words.
Okay. The high desert is just not the most desirable place in California. When I came here to go to college, I asked my parents many times, why did you choose California City? If you don't know anything about California City,
I've seen the grids of it.
There's a hilarious podcast about the land scam that was California City. And then my dad lived in Apple Valley. So both high desert, lots of land, lots of tumbleweeds. Went to Cal Poly, studied biochemistry. I got in as poli sci because I was going to do law. I wanted to do I wanted to be a trademark attorney in like the medical industry. And then I got in and said, actually, I think I really like working with people. So I wanted to be a doctor. And so I did the pre-med route, and I worked at Ambiance for a couple years leading up to when I graduated, and the owner was pretty checked out towards that point in her career, and I offered to take out an SBA loan and buy it.
How old are you at this point?
23.
Wow. Okay.
And I knew nothing. It's very, very, very silly.
But, which is the only time we can do these things when we know nothing.
Yeah. Very bold, not a lot of wisdom. I met my now husband soon after that. It was right before kind of the 06, it was 04 I bought it. And then, a few years later, the recession hit. And I was like, I really need to figure this out. And our first son was on the way. And I was like, I really need to figure this out. So I've always like to say, like, one of the gifts I feel like God gave me is, like, I love to learn. And I love to surround myself with people that are smarter than me. And then go, hey, how do you do that? And how do you do this? Mm-hmm. So I was really lucky early on to be supported and surrounded by a lot of very smart business people. And both my parents were entrepreneurs. So it was in my blood.
Yeah, because I think there has to be some sort of foundation, right? It's hard to
the ability to take risks.
Yeah.
Yeah, for sure. I think about that a lot. The gifts that our parents give us and sometimes the not gifts that they give us.
But also being bold and having that kind of lawyer confidence in yourself, I would imagine helped as well.
Yeah. I think it was naive. Okay. but yes, I remember the banker that we worked with at the time, he at one point walked in because I had opened the doors of the business before I had been fully funded by the SBA loan. And he goes, that's a pretty bold move. And I was like, well, product's coming in. I got to figure out what to do with it. And I learned a lot the hard way, a lot. I still do that.
So what was your kind of goal? Because you got married young, fairly young.
How old? 26.
Yeah, so I guess that's actually about average. But you were together.
23 is when I met him.
So you got married at 26. You have two sons, 18 and 14 now.
Yes.
So they've grown up with you being a business owner.
Yes.
So it's a family affair.
Yeah, and my husband helps me run the business, so we run it together.
We have more of a family affair.
Yeah.
So how did you end up, it's a loftier thing to say, how did you end up making it all work? Because I'm sure you're going to say, well, it didn't always work, but how did you find your way throughout the years when the kids were little and being able to grow the business and keep your marriage kind of going along? I mean, that's to me the $64,000 question that's been going on since the second wave of feminism, when
right.
we were told you can do it all. You can have a full-time career and you can have kids and you can have a husband and it's all just going to magically work together. And yet it's been this ongoing, you know, unicorn.
I think I said this in the last time you had me on the podcast, which was a long time ago.
Which is what I was going to talk about, how things have changed. Because I think it's been 10 years since the last time we talked on the air.
I think you do what you have to in the beginning. It isn't always what you want to. Mm-hmm. And it's, you know, I think I remember saying early on, there's probably always one ball falling somewhere where you don't want it to. Because depending on the age of your kids or, you know, kids are really busy when they're young. And so you probably sacrifice some time with your husband, right? Because you're really focused on that baby phase. And, you know, as an entrepreneur, you're also married to your business. So you just have to work hard. I think about that a lot because I think this younger generation, they've been sold a lie about how to be successful and that it is, they're deserving of it without the effort, without the hard work and the sacrifice. Anything worth doing in life requires sacrifice. Hmm. Relationships, marriage, work,
children.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And the best gifts also require the biggest sacrifice. Like being a parent is, you know, it's my vocation. It's the best thing that's ever happened to me. And there have been times when I kind of sucked at it.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't get the tools from my parents that I hope to give to my kids to deal with the stresses of life and parenting and being a wife and a friend and all the things, right?
Well, and I think that's kind of the key conversation or piece of it is, where is this story? Where did it come from that the Gen Zs believe that they shouldn't have to suffer or struggle or work too hard, that it's not worth it? You know, where did that come? You know, was that the millennial parents, or that, I guess that's wrong, that would be Gen X parents saying, you know, watching them work so hard and not have balance in their life?
It would be millennials too.
And millennials, yeah.
Yeah.
But
I am a millennial.
Okay.
Yes. Yeah.
So there's something that was modeled to the Gen Zs that they're looking at. And it was either parents working so hard, because again, it's still, our whole social structure shifted in the 1970s, late 70s. So we're only like two or three generations out from there.
Have you heard that saying, it's strong people create good times. Good times create weak people. Weak people create hard times. Hard times create strong people. It's like
interesting, almost like the generational changes.
Yeah. And how I think, you know, my parents, I was very forced to be independent. And I think that was very hard on me. And it also produced me. I am the way I am because of it. And, you know, I will just work. If I have to, whatever it is I have to do, I'm just going to do it. And I figure out how to do it. And it's just part of who I am. And I know for my kids, you know, you want to give your kids the world. And so because of our hard work, I think even as a parent, I can speak for me as a parent, I've done more for them than was always healthy for them. Your kids That's have fair. To fail.
Mm-hmm.
They have to struggle. And there is that tendency. It's like the soccer trophies to the kids that are picking daisies.
Yeah.
That's not life.
Yeah.
And I think you know, as a parent, you want to protect them, but there's a certain amount of protection that hinders their development and their growth. You want them to fail where you're there to pick them up, because life is, I mean, there's a lot of suffering and struggle in life, in the best life.
Yeah.
There just is. There's failure, sickness, rejection.
Yeah. If you're just tuning in, my guest today is Cannon January, CEO of Ambiance, wife, mother of two. And this is a conversation with a reluctant therapist. I'm Elizabeth Barrett. Our number is 805-781-3875. If you have any thoughts on today's conversation, we'd love to hear from you. And yeah, I'm curious about how you define yourself in this period of your life. How do you feel about the woman you've grown into in the 21 years that you've been wife and mothering and business owning?
I think that I'm happier than I have ever been with myself and with my life. I wish I could go back and give my younger self some of the wisdom that I've learned along the way. I also think I'd make a really amazing parent at 44. Not that
like
I'm looking
do over the whole
not
thing.
That I'm looking to be, but
yeah,
you know, as I'm learning how to parent an adult, which is, you know, they call him an adult, but I love the dean of students where he's at MSU in Bozeman says they're not quite adults and they're no longer children. And I was like, amen.
Yes.
Something in between.
Yes, they are. They're floating in the bubble.
Yes.
Between the two spaces. So where do you, you know, when you think about your role or responsibilities as a business owner and as a mother and, you know, kind of moving into this mentoring role, because you've always had young people working for you, and I think that you've mentored and helped them. How do you see your role or responsibility to those coming up behind you?
That's a good question. I used to, when I was younger, I used to always, I'd want to develop a great team, and then I wanted to hang on to them as hard as I could, you know, keep them.
Like family.
Yeah, there. Mm-hmm. And as I've, you know, done professional development, I've really learned that you don't have control around the future. All I can do is hope to help people be the best that they can be, no matter where they want to go in their life. And, you know, I think in response to my childhood, I felt like I needed to control a lot to feel safe and to be successful. And as I get older and even parent, the more I let go, the more success I find, the more peace and joy that I find, and the happier my kids seem to be.
Mm. So what does that look like to let go?
I can talk from a parenting perspective. Mm-hmm. I've never been formally diagnosed with OCD, but I'm very particular around how I'd like my house to be and how I want the boys to keep their room. And, there used to be like a big fight in the morning, you know, make your beds, do all this.
Mm. And, clothes in the hamper.
Yep. Mm-hmm. And I realized that's not how I want to start my day. And so I don't do that. And, you know, they don't make their bed. And then when they want to do something, I'd be like, hey, you didn't honor your responsibilities. So unfortunately, you're not able to do that. You know, it's just a little more like, here's what is asked of you. You can show up and be responsible, and that allows these things to happen, or you cannot do the things that you need to do, in which case then you don't get to do the fun things. And next time, maybe you'll do it different. And it just, it like takes all that fight out of the room. Mm-hmm. Or dirty clothes. Well, it looks like you're not going to have clothes to wear that are clean. Might have to dig something out of the hamper.
Yeah,
because we used to do our clothes for our kids,
yes.
And then my husband was like, "What are we doing?"
Yes.
And we shifted that, and sometimes they don't sometimes their basketball clothes are real smelly.
So, and that's an interesting thing, because the idea of natural consequences in parenting and in marriages as well, that whole idea of natural consequences kind of went out of style in the last 20 years. If you look at parenting books or parenting trends, this idea that we don't say no to our children and that we want to never, you know, make them feel less than or feel ashamed or embarrassed, or just like this whole list of rules around parenting. And I don't, and again, as a clinician and as a, you know, a parenting expert, which I, you know, sometimes wonder, because I look at how things have trended and am I just a dinosaur? But we're seeing this kind of curve back around.
Coming back, yeah.
Yes. That it's exhausting to parent when you feel that you're responsible for every emotion your child experiences. I think that's a daunting thing to put on another human being.
And yet, you know, it's interesting, like the parenting fads. I have just listened to somebody talk about attachment theory, which I find super fascinating and really like a great way to assess where you're at and then maybe find areas where you need to grow, right, in terms of how you attach to people. And my two boys are very different personalities, and we did the Ferber method with our first boy. Mm-hmm. And I remember being in my early 20s, and like my husband and I kind of holding each other crying as our son was crying in the other room, and we're doing the 5, 10, 15 minutes.
That's a sleep training method. Just for
Yeah. Where you cry, let them cry it out. You check on them, but you go in after 5 minutes and 10 minutes. And he has a detached attachment style. And when I got pregnant with our second son, my husband actually came to me and said, by the way, we're never doing that.
You can't do that again. Yeah.
It was horrible. And our younger son has a healthy attachment style. And I really do, because listening to that, it's about that time in their life. So it's like, I think we can take things too far, right? And that was somebody's philosophy. And you can see how maybe it's not the right time to instill independence into a baby, because although he was a really good sleeper at a young age, I think it probably hurt him a little bit. And I had to call him and apologize immediately after I listened to that.
Well, I think there's, and again, that's all the things that we learn as we grow as parents. And as a side note, why I am so sad that we don't carry elder wisdom into our parenting, or even mentor wisdom of someone who's 44 with someone who's 24, as opposed to someone 24 taking their parent guidelines from someone who's 26. You know, that I think that becomes problematic. And although Ferber is problematic and with the attachment styles, I will counter that by saying there are a lot of women who would have had a nervous breakdown or had to go on meds or, you know, had to be able to go to work. And so the Ferber method actually was a reflection of that changing post-1970s feminist movement, where there wasn't this...
It was a tool.
It was a tool, because the narrative had become such that you don't have the...
bandwidth.
Or the time, right, to just sleep... stay up all night with that child if you're getting up and going to work. And so I think we don't pay enough attention to how the cultural narrative pushes also what we think is the right thing to do in raising kids and families.
Yeah. Well, and I mean, listening to the woman that was talking about it, our brains are malleable. So you can work through some of these things if you find yourself there. And I could see how a child under 2 years old would have a hard time processing that process, because I think for us as parents, I cannot tell you how many very long conversations I had with my kids where I wasn't listening to their body language or looking at their eyes, because I think I can rationalize with them, right? And kids really, the subconscious mind at that age cannot process information like we can, or the conscious mind.
And that, again, is the dilemma of where we are right now, because there's a lot of information that younger generations are getting, and they're looking and saying...
It's brainwashing through social media. I mean, yes.
That's for sure brainwashing, but I can see...
Not intentional, but just like whatever algorithm you're on, it's a feedback loop. Right? You're just going to get the same reinforced. I was listening to you talk about the... you know, people justifying having babies on their own.
Yeah.
Our brains are magical at rationalizing any decision we make.
It's true.
And I think as a society, we've become more defensive and closed to any opposing information. And that's so dangerous. Mm. You know, we really need to be able to challenge ourselves and each other in our ideas. That's where we grow. We don't grow when people just tell us we're right all the time.
Yeah. And it becomes kind of an empty experience because there's never anything that motivates us to feel uncomfortable. Mm. And I think that's part of the whole parenting dilemma. I don't want my child to ever feel hurt or sad or bullied or disappointed, but it's in that discomfort and having hard things happen and overcoming those hard things that actually brings the strength. If you're just tuning in, this is a conversation with a reluctant therapist. I'm Elizabeth Barrett. My guest today is Canon January, and we're just kind of discussing what it is to be a woman in the 21st century and how things have changed or where we might be going. And you're welcome to be part of the conversation as well. Our number is 805-781-3875. We're going to catch our breath and come back and continue the conversation right here on Central Coast Public Radio, KCBX.
Baby, you understand me now. If sometimes you see that I'm mad, don't you know no one alive can always be an angel? When everything goes wrong, you see some bad. But I'm just a soul whose intentions are understood. You know, sometimes, baby, I'm so carefree with a joy that's hard to hide. And then sometimes again it seems that all I have is worry. And then you're bound to see my other side.
I'm Elizabeth Barrett, and this is a conversation with a reluctant therapist with my guest, Canon January, CEO of Ambiance, and also a mother of two and wife and woman of the 21st century. All right, so let's talk about the marriage part of being a woman in the 21st century, because again, there's a lot of research saying that, you know, the younger generations are kind of turning their back on it, and that marriage is kind of an old institution that doesn't serve who we are now. What are your thoughts, yay or nay, on the institution of?
I believe in the institution of marriage, like wholeheartedly. I think when I was in my 20s. I knew I wanted to be married, but I wouldn't have had the conviction that I do today around the value that it brings, not only to your family, but to you as a person. We just talked about, you need someone pushing back, like whether it's, you know, and you need a sounding board, you know, choosing the right person is, I'm not going to say it's not challenging. It is. But, and also like you're probably going to grow up together. You're probably going to fail together.
Yeah.
You 100% at one point, at least one point, will think this might not work out. I mean,
more than once, probably. Over the course of many
like,
years.
Yes. And I can say that the dedication, the perseverance that I have experienced in my marriage and from my husband has been the best gift to me and to my boys, our family.
So what changed? At what point do you think your feelings about the commitment changed?
I actually think it was through challenging times and the realization. I mean, I had a very challenging childhood. My parents were divorced and my mom was an alcoholic. I really wasn't given tools on how to navigate conflict or different opinions, even, and how you're going to raise your kids, or, you know, what you're going to do with how you're going to spend your money. And I would say my husband was probably in the same boat as me. So we learned it together from a lot of trial and error. Mm-hmm. And it was a point where I realized that it wasn't all his fault. Like, my unhappiness and my struggle wasn't really about him. Mm-hmm. And it's so easy when you're in a relationship to, you know, people are flawed. And I remember when it happened, him and I got into a pretty big fight, and he's usually the calm one. I'm a little, I tend to be a little hot, more high and
fiery.
Low. Fiery. I'm fiery. Mm-hmm. I'm intense. Mm-hmm. Passionate. And I remember he got mad, which was really, it's uncommon. He's usually like calm and even, and it like popped my bubble.
Mm.
And I almost
like
wanted
a safety bubble that you had.
And I almost wanted to laugh because I saw how ridiculous in the moment that we were fighting about this, and like how we were fighting, and how I didn't mean anything I was saying. And it was like this gift, blessing. And then I just never saw it the same. And
the conflict.
Well, the relationship or him. Mm-hmm.
Everything shifted.
Mm. And we've had other, I lost my dad about 2 years ago. Like they say, when you have, when your heart breaks, it breaks open. And I think it can break open or it can harden. Mm-hmm. I think that tends to be the direction it goes. And mine broke open, and made me a better person.
Hmm.
You know,
and again, like you said, the hard things lead to the better things.
Right. Well, I'm a person of faith, and I believe through some of the biggest sacrifices come the greatest gifts. And I think that's true for us, but we have to move through the sacrifice. You know, I think as a society, because there's so much immediate gratification, so much distraction, that it's easier for people to avoid the pain, and you have to move through it.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. And you have to find what your part in it is. I think we're so quick to point outward, you know, all those adages, they exist for a reason. Mm-hmm. You know, when one finger is pointing out, four fingers are pointing in. You can only change yourself. And I started looking at my husband and like in my phone, he's the love of my life. And he is the love of my life. But I remember when I changed that, it's because I wanted to feel that, you know? And I think so often we get caught up in like, well, you know, he didn't say I love you in a way that I wanted to hear this morning, or he forgot to kiss me goodbye, or, you know, he did that thing that he always does that I ask him not to do, and it's so annoying. When you focus on that, that's all you're going to see. But when you focus, you know, I said to my husband before I got into this, I said, you know, I just think you're amazing. Do you ever get sick of me saying that? And he goes, absolutely not. And I think that's what we all need from one another, especially if you're going to choose to build a family with someone and be in a marriage with them. And love is sacrifice.
Yeah. There's a great quote that says, enduring love is not about the moment to moment. Enduring love is the culmination of a year of years of witnessing another person's life.
Mm.
And I think about that as well. It's like, it's the caring and witnessing of our stories. It feels so powerful. And it is in the whole idea of sacrifice and struggle and suffering. I think that really is kind of the missing piece or the challenging piece for the generations coming up behind us, because they don't
They don't know what to do with it.
They don't know what to do with the struggle. And there's, and I think what you're saying is true. There's too many ways for them to not have to, right? They've almost been allowed to check out. We've allowed a generation of young men to be video game players. And I've said this before, but when I do premarital counseling, which I do quite a bit, the biggest struggle my couples have is the amount of video games that their potential or their husband plays and how that impacts our life. Like, it's a specific thing that's been normalized. And so there's such, and also I'll hear the couple say, we just need our time apart. Like, I need my chill time. I need my time apart. I have to have my video games. And because it feels like every time things start to get tough or inconvenient or uncomfortable, instead of moving through them, as you're talking about, they're wanting to bounce backwards and retreat. You know, I'll vape, I'll smoke weed, I'll do video game. I just need to check out. I'll scroll on my phone.
Instagram, TikTok, Instagram,
right? There's so
YouTube.
Many ways to deflect and go internal instead of moving through.
And I think people feel some amount of guilt and shame, mm-hmm. whether or not they're paying attention to that. So they get stuck in a loop.
Yes. Well, the habits, right? The way we interact with our partners become kind of our story, our dance. And it was fascinating that you said, you know, that something popped. And that's generally how, you know, when couples get into negative loops, they just get in these patterns of how they behaved with each other and they can't see any other way out. You always do this. Well, you always do this. Well, you always do this. They just get caught. And when they come to counseling, the fix is so simple, but people don't seem to recognize the power is literally someone saying, I choose to be married and I don't want to argue anymore. I want to only focus on the things that go well. It's like just shifting the energy of that relationship. There's not really a magic tool for how we fight fair or, you know, right. doing date nights. It's really, like you said, making that decision. If you're just tuning in, my guest today is Canon January, and this is a conversation with a reluctant therapist. Our number is 805-781-3875. I'd like to share your thoughts and ideas today.
Yeah, I think that our ego gets in the way of our happiness, and I think finding a certain amount of humility, because, you know, sacrifice, people don't even like that word, right? I remember the first time my sister said that to me, that love is sacrifice, I kind of got mad at her.
Yeah.
And I was like, what do you mean?
I
shouldn't have to. It should be all about me. And it's like, actually, love, real love, is the opposite. And I think that our culture and our world have really pushed the narrative that it can and should be all about you. And, you know, you deserve this and you should have this. And instead about, like, it's not about what I can give, it's what can you give me?
Yeah.
And it's a much happier way to live when you're focused more on the part that you can control, which is, again, what you can give, how you can show up.
Agreed. And it kind of leans into the other piece that I wanted to touch is your other role, because we've talked about wife and mother and a little bit about daughter, your experience. But now how about the business owner piece and how that plays into even the idea of you're in a world of retail sales, and a lot of people use retail as therapy, or mm-hmm. they're coming to you with expectations that you're going to make their life better. So how do you see your role almost in that world?
Our vision, the company vision, is to, you know, give great service and make sure that women feel happy and confident, whether they purchase anything in the store or not. And do we always get it right? Obviously not, because it is built with a team of people and we all make mistakes, unfortunately, but that's our goal. That's our goal every day. As I've grown, the company has grown, and we've been able to, you know, create more systems to help to support this vision to become a reality. But, I let people down. I definitely make mistakes. My ego gets in the way, you know.
Would you still love stepping into the store and the possibilities of it all?
I've been doing it a very long time.
Mm-hmm.
Yes and no. That's a complicated question. I think leaving, had one kid leave the house, and that brings up a lot of emotions. You start to really reflect on your life and your time and, you know, this 60-hour work weeks, the busy time during the holidays. And, you know, I always tell this to my team too. Time is the only finite commodity we have. So take care of it. You know, we should make sure that it's meaningful. And, you know, retail's a grind. So although there are wonderful parts of it, I mean, the community of clients and people that come shop there, lovely, wonderful humans. You know, it's not easy. And I would say it gets a little harder every year. I think sometimes that's because my part of my growth, right? It's, I don't want to do it that way anymore. We just did our holiday fundraiser and raised the most that we've ever raised for MOF.
Good for you. What is MOF?
It's the Martha Olson Fernandez Foundation. It supports ALS patients on the Central Coast and research. We raised over $20,000, but it's my last one. Okay. It's the last one I'm doing. I'll still do some sort of fundraising activity because that fills my bucket, giving back. And I want to do it differently because I think I worked like a 80-hour week, 1 week, several 12-hour days, me and my COO, Dominique, and the there's just a bunch of us that's just worked a ton to make it happen. I mean, everybody worked, but like kind of the people that are there full time core players. And I don't want to do that anymore. Mm-hmm. I want to find an easier way. I think that as an entrepreneur, that growth is rewarding and difficult. And then I do business coaching. I actually really love doing that. I wish I had more time to do that.
Mm-hmm. So your interests are flexing a bit, but the idea of work for you isn't. I mean, you obviously get fulfillment from that, but I think I think that's a conundrum again for the generations coming up behind us because they're also so influenced by COVID and how things changed. We're working from home and then no one wants to go to work because everyone was working from home and the other shift of sacrifice and time is finite. The effort that goes into doing a brick and mortar store and maintaining online, I wonder if that's still a value. Is that still a value to enough younger people? Is that the time we should be doing that? Because sometimes I wonder if we should flip it and that, you know, we're home raising our kids and putting our time and energy to that and we hit 44 and the kids leave home. And then you go, hey, my time, you know, is now and I'm going to charge in and put all this energy. Like, I wonder if we flip it too much.
I think about habits because, I mean, I hire people at different stages of their life. And I would say that if you could afford to be at home with your kids when you hit 44 and the kids are gone, because it is a real job. It's a full-time job. I think it's hard to imagine having to step into the workforce at that stage of your life and then build something from the ground up. Not that people don't do it. They do it all the time. But I think that can be a challenge for people. And I do think being a mom is the most important job that I've had in my life.
Would you want to do it again? Do over? Start today?
I mean, yes and no. I don't know that it's fair to the child to have a child at this age in my life. And health-wise, I couldn't do it because of the Lyme disease. And I love babies. So
well, I would be a really good mama. Parenting is fabulous, too.
Yes.
Because my grandkids are 10 and 5, and so that's a whole different energy and a whole different focus. But I do wonder about like the nature of family and work and child rearing and how our expectations are. Like I fully understand the idea of sacrifice and having to put many hours in. How do we make it more family friendly or focused if we're going to do that much work? Or do we delay it? Like I don't have an answer for it because I'm just
Speaking
from where you and I are reflecting on what you and I are saying, so I don't have an answer, but
My husband was home, though. Okay. My husband when Asher, our youngest 14-year-old, I think he was about three, my husband called me one day and said, hey, we're paying for a full-time nanny. And he says, I think we can figure out how to live on less. And I think I should be home with the kids. Because for him, he was leaving before they got up and then home like right before bed, because they were going to bed at 7:30 at that time, you know? And for me, like, I would just bring the nanny with me. I was like, you know, mm-hmm. She was like my wife.
Yeah.
Do miss that part. But actually, my husband's an amazing cook, so I'm good. But he got to step into that role, which was amazing and also hard, because you feel like you're missing out.
In the work world.
Well, no.
You're missing out. Oh, so it was harder for you.
It was harder for me. And I think it was hard for him in unspoken ways, like when he goes to meet other men. And then as the kids have gotten older, he's really stepped into helping me run the business. And he's the CFO and he does a lot, which has been really good. I love this quote that if everybody's rowing in the same direction, you're unstoppable. Mm-hmm. I think that's especially true for like a husband and wife team. Mm-hmm. Like if you can get on the same page and start rowing together, it's amazing what you can do together.
Mm-hmm. What role does faith play? Because you mentioned that earlier that you are a faith-based person. What role is that for you?
I mean, for me, it's foundational. My husband and I are becoming Catholic.
And that seems kind of old OCIA. School, doesn't it?
Yeah. And, you know, we put our kids through Catholic school, so we've been, you know, around the faith. And my husband was actually, he was a cradle Catholic. He was baptized as a baby Catholic. And my husband just found, you know, his path to God in the last year. And it's a beautiful story. And then he said, you know, we should become Catholic. And I was like, all right, let's do it. And it's been awesome.
So what does that do for your marriage when you say we're going to become Catholic? Because it sounds like, and we'll take up rowing. Or
I think it anchors and creates a foundation that really is what we were missing. You know,
as a couple or as individuals?
Both.
Okay.
Because of who we are. You know, I think I have a very nuanced view of spirituality and faith, and I am really open and accepting of what people need in their lives that makes them better. Mm. And also for me, you know, God has been central in the difficult times.
When you were young as well, do you
yes.
think?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Very young. And neither of my parents were particularly, they didn't go to church or talk about faith. I was in Christian school and that's really where I found it. And it's been something for me to rely on consistently in my life.
Mm-hmm. So, as a mother of two sons, 18 and 14, what do you hope that you've given them to be foundational for their lives? And your 14-year-old is still in the forming stages.
Formative ages, yeah. Mm-hmm. I think being open is, I mean, I would love it if they both decided to have faith. I think that's a personal journey that they're going to have to take and discover on their own. Our younger one actually is becoming Catholic with us, and our other one is not so sure about any of it. I think for me, because I see a lot of judgment and divisiveness in the world, I try to have a lot of conversations with him about just being open to hearing other people's thoughts and opinions. I think that's what our world is missing, is that openness and like kindness and love around some of these very difficult, nuanced conversations.
So in our last minute, what is it that you look forward to in all these areas of your life in the next 20 years, or the next time we have a conversation about this 10 years from now?
just being in awe of my kids becoming who, you know, God intended them to be. And grandkids, definitely grandkids. I have a 2-year-old niece who is amazing. And I have she's like 4 or 5 month old. One of my nieces had a baby. So is that my great aunt?
I think you're, yeah, exactly.
My grantee.
Exactly.
I get to see her in a week. I'm really excited. I'm a baby whisperer. If your baby needs help settling down, I can make it happen.
That's a whole nother
job,
a whole nother entrepreneur place. And maybe that's, you know, the place for women who want to enter the workforce, you know, in their elder years, to take on some of those roles as baby whisperers and sharing the wisdom.
Yeah, I like
Canon
that.
January, thank you for coming in and hanging out with me for an hour.
Thanks for having me. So easy.
CEO of Ambiance, online and in San Luis Obispo and in Paso Robles, mother of 2. I hope you have a fabulous holiday season.
You
and
too.
Watching the 2 young men that you are raising grow up. And I also, we didn't get a chance to talk about it. I'd love to, you know, lean into next time what it's like for the boys to have grown up with dad at home. So we'll save that for our 2026 conversation.
Okay, sounds good.
This has been a conversation with a reluctant therapist. I'm Elizabeth Barrett. You can send me an email to elizabeth@thereluctanttherapist.com. Find us on Instagram, Facebook, listen to previous shows at kcbx.org, or podcast our show to listen to your convenience. As always, thank you for tuning in, supporting our community. I hope I'll get a chance to see you at the big fundraiser on Saturday, November 22nd. And until then, thank you for supporting Central Coast Public Radio, KCBX.